The title is Cherish the Holes. It's based on Isaiah 53. It's based on the songs we've sung, but it's also based on something that was shared with me a few weeks ago. Prior to my quarantine, we spent 3 weeks looking at the gospel under the theme, it is a lot simpler than you think. We gave a definition of calling on the name of the Lord based on its position as a participial phrase in Acts chapter 22 and verse 16. We looked at the understanding of the word for in its forward pointing position in Acts 2:38. Then we looked at the fact that prophecy points to a single identifiable church all the way back to the days of David. The writings of Samuel. We use logic. We use fulfillment of prophecy. We use grammar. And we may return to that one last time in a couple of weeks. But for today, I want to kind of shift gears. And I want to go from the logical, grammatical, to the emotional side of the gospel. Because I'm very much both sides of that. Someone shared a tearjerker video with me several weeks ago. And I'll flat out tell you, the first time I watched it, I had a tear run down my cheek and I got choked up. It was sent with the idea of using it, so I watched it again. And the second time, I was an emotional basket case. The third time, the last time I watched it to take notes, I had to continually pause it to compose myself. It's just one of those things that at my age, the age of my children, it hit me. And at that last point, I kept losing the speaker in my own thoughts. You may have seen it. I'm going to summarize it. A man is standing in the rubble of his house after a storm. Starts with the fact that their house was more than just a house. You know, sometimes we refer to houses and other things, other material possessions after a disaster as, well, they're just material things. They can be replaced. And that's true to a point. But he goes on to say there's more to it than that. He talked about how he and his wife had lain awake at night when they didn't have 2 cents to rub together and dreamed about one day being able to build their own house. He talked about how they went on to nail studs, pull wire, stain floors, finish sheetrock and paint until it was perfect. And then he says, almost perfect. It was their dream home. It was their beacon on the horizon. It's what drove them as a couple to build their future. But he goes on to say that it wasn't until the imperfections began to appear that he realized what had made it perfect. Walking around through the rubble, he points to a double pane window. The outer pane had been broken for years. He said, I never repaired it because it was a reminder of all the hours of baseball played in their backyard. And then he makes the statement, the imperfections made it perfect. Behind the window was a bedroom with holes in the wall the size of the end of your little finger. Holes made by a 5-year-old who wanted to bow hunt like his daddy. He would line up his stuffed animals and he would build a blind and then he would shoot his stuffed animals with a toy bow and every time he missed it made a hole in the wall. He talks about how he was upset at the time. But how now he realizes it's part of what made their home perfect. He references the carport that's no longer standing there. He mentions how it had a bullet hole in the roof, and every time it would rain, it would drip. And it reminded him of a 12-year-old who got his first .22 rifle for Christmas. So excited, he ran out into the carport, but the gun accidentally discharged, and he had his first near miss with a firearm. Life lessons learned, and a step toward perfection. Finally, he mentions a crack 2 feet long in the brick wall. He said, I would tell my wife every time we went to town, remind me to get a tube of caulk to repair that crack. And he said, then I would walk by the caulk hoping she would not remind me. And she never did, because it was a reminder of surviving Hurricane Rita, of rebuilding, overcoming, and getting better. So he finishes his video and he says, it wasn't everything being right that made it perfect. It was the holes. The holes equal the memories. The holes equal the important things that take place in a house that turn it into a home. I'm going to make 3 observations this morning. The first is physical, and it's the one that was getting me the first couple of times I watched it. And then I connected it to the other side. I've been there. I've been there at those moments when the little holes or the scratches on the new vehicle or the broken knickknacks made me apoplectic with anger, frustration with my children. And yet there are scars on vehicles that have been sold, traded, or totaled long ago. There are little bumps in the walls or the ceiling that I have long since repaired. You wouldn't be able to find them. With Joshua in Cuba for the second time this year, and both of those stays longer than 2 months, I wish I could touch the holes in the wall. He's a grown man. He's a hard worker. He is constantly shipped all over this world because they need him in places. I'm proud of him. But I miss the holes. Riley let his bike fall over and scratch the red truck. The one I drove for 10 years. It ended up totaled. The one that the guy ran the red light up there at Shaw and hit Joshua and Chase after school one afternoon. Riley's now a junior at UNA. He's fixing to move out, move on campus on the CSC as part of their board. I wish I could run my finger down the scratch. And there's Boo. He's, in a sense, the child of our old age. Waited a little bit for him. The spots on the ceiling and the walls and the doors from the hours of basketball he's played in the house. I cleaned up the ones in the kitchen when we remodeled. You'll never know they're there. I'm not sure I'm going to fix the ones in the living room or in his bedroom, at least as long as we live there. With him being an 8th grader now, I'm going to need some bumps to remind me of the childhood. I don't get to coach my kids anymore. There used to be a sword-sized hole. I made it in the wall playing. We just simply call it playing lightsabers. We play Star Wars. The end of my sword flew off. It sailed about 8 feet across the room, and it stuck in the wall. It looked like a cartoon. It was quivering in the wall. I repaired it years ago. You wouldn't know where it was. We do. But oh, for a lightsaber battle with all 3. One more time. The funny noise our couch makes when you sit on it because of all the wrestling matches. All the times it was the safe place in hide and seek in the dark. And you ran down the hall and you dove over the back of the couch and you landed on it. Every time you sit on it now, you think you're going all the way through the floor. It's those little imperfections that make our house our home. So point number one, parents, grandparents, cherish the holes. Cherish the imperfections. Cherish the clutter in your house and so on that make your house a home. Far too quickly, your house will be empty. Your house will be quiet. Your kids aren't going to have friends over who are playing chase and football in your living room. And you're going to miss the hustle and the bustle. You're going to have all the time in the world to clean up the clutter, to repair the walls. And at some point, you're going to walk through your house looking for the holes. Cherish them now before it's too late. It's the memories that make it perfect, not the spotless walls. It's kind of true with our bodies. I have a hole in my left shin bone, all the way through the bone, that reminds me of church camp as a teen where I got hit by a runaway horseshoe. There was no horse on it either. Kid missed the pit completely. I have a scar over my eye. I have a scar where my lip was split clean open when I stuck my face through the window of my Mustang at 16, 17 years old. Nearly killed me. Memories, scars, lessons learned. Let's make a second observation. Let's make a spiritual one. Let's make an emotional one. Which one of us is scarless in this life? Few of us are physically, none of us are spiritually, even emotionally. If there were no imperfections in my spiritual life, there'd be no need for the sacrifice. The cross wouldn't have happened. He died because we are not perfect. Romans 3 and verse 10, there's none righteous, not even one. Verse 23, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Chapter 5, verse 8, God demonstrated His own love toward us, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He died to remove the sins, but in a sense, He didn't remove the scars because they're reminders of how far we've come. They're reminders of the imperfections that He's perfected. Reminders of why He died. Now Isaiah 53. Go ahead and get there and mark it, but we're going to work our way through Luke in a second as well. This is the big one. This is where you go back and you take the logic of the last few weeks and you realize, as logical as the gospel is, it's also a real story. It's a story of our Father who sent the one and only to walk this earth, to be the perfect, spotless, blameless Lamb of God as my sacrifice. And yet what I want you to see right now, what I want you to connect with Isaiah 53 and with our story is this. It was not the fact that He was sinless alone that made Him perfect. He was perfected by His willingness to bear our stripes. That completed the whole process. He was perfected by His willingness to take our holes in His body. Listen to Isaiah 53. And I know we've read it, but I want you to hear it again. And I want you to start out by noticing in Isaiah 53 what did not make Him perfect. Who has believed our message? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, like a root out of parched ground. No stately form or majesty that we should look upon him, nor appearance. So it wasn't his appearance. He wasn't perfect because he was this specimen. Despised, forsaken of men, a man of sorrows. David, that's another psalm we could add in. Acquainted with grief, like one from whom men hide their face, despised. We didn't esteem him. Surely our griefs he himself bore, our sorrows he carried. We ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, afflicted, pierced through for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, chastened for our will. I'm running through this part. I'm going to come back to it. By a scourging we are healed. Like sheep we've all gone astray. Each one of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord caused the iniquity of us to fall on him. Again, the things that did not perfect him. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he didn't open his mouth. Like a lamb led to slaughter, like a sheep that is silent before his shearers, he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation, who considered the fact that he was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgressions of the people to whom the stroke was due? His grave was assigned with wicked men, with rich men in his death, because he had done no violence, nor there was any deceit in his mouth, and yet that's not what perfected him. So watch this. Watch this last part of Isaiah 53. This hit me about 3 weeks ago, and it stunned me for a second. But the Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. If, watch this conditional, if he would render himself as a guilt offering, then he gets to see his offspring, then he gets to prolong his days, then the good pleasure of the Lord will prosper his hand. As a result of the anguish of his soul, he will see it and be satisfied. The perfection process was Jesus saying, "Here I am. Take me, Father." By his knowledge, the righteous one, my servant, will justify the many, bear their iniquities. Therefore, because he did all that, because he bore the stripes, because he took the beating, because he took the nails, therefore I will allot him a portion with the great. Not because he's sinless, not because he's perfect, not because he's my son, because he took what somebody else deserved. He will divide the booty with the strong because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he himself bore the sin of many and interceded for the transgressors. So I'm going to repeat it. It was not his outward appearance. It was not that he went with his mouth closed to the cross. It was not the sinlessness alone. Add all those up together, and it's still not all that it took to make him perfect. Isaiah said he was perfected by his willingness to bear our stripes. He was perfected by the stripes, by the holes. I want you to run back through it with me now. And starting at verse 4, I want you to watch these phrases. They're in blue on your screen. Our griefs he himself bore. Our sorrows he carried. Notice they're not his. Smitten of God. Imagine that. Son, I need you to go. I need you to die. And by the way, I'm going to have you beaten. You're going to be afflicted. You're going to be pierced for somebody else's transgressions. You're going to be crushed for somebody else's iniquities. Now listen to this wording from Isaiah. The chastening for our well-being fell upon him. By his scourging. When they threw him over that pole, tied his hands down, stripped him, and beat him within an inch of his life, that healed me. That perfected me. That last phrase, the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on Him. And I want you to think about that. It's very, very personal. Yes, I understand that. He died for me. That's enough weight. But then it says He caused the iniquity of us all. Every last sin committed from the beginning of time until the time Jesus returns that is forgiven fell on the back of the Son of God in a single moment. Oppressed, afflicted. He goes on and he mentions oppression and judgment and slaughter, cut off for the transgression of my people to whom the stroke was due. The Father says through Isaiah, I should have beat my own people. And yet I let the stroke fall on the back of my Son so that it would please me. Not in the sense that it make Him happy, but it would please the debt. Crushed Him, putting Him to grief, rendering Him as a guilt offering. The good pleasure of the Lord, as a result of the anguish of His soul, He will see it and be satisfied. Justify the many, bear their iniquities, because He poured out Himself to death, numbered with transgressors. He's the one that stands alone. He's the sinless one. He says, count me with them, because I'm about to take their sins. He bore the sins of the many. He interceded. He stepped in when the whip was about to fall on my back. He stepped in. He took the beating. He took the nails. His final perfection was in the stripes. His final perfection was in the holes. That's why He was so adamant in Matthew 16. When He told Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." It's because He had to get there. He had to get to Jerusalem. He had to get to the cross. He had to go through the garden. And He needed them with Him there. He needed the support system. He needed the angels. He needed the transfiguration with Moses and Elijah. He had to absorb it all so that the imperfections that come about through that process complete both His and our perfection. To me, that's why it's so awe-inspiring to follow the thread in Luke. It begins in Luke 9, verse 51. When the days were approaching for His ascension, He was determined to go to Jerusalem. King James says He set His face resolutely. Everything else gets pushed aside, in a sense. And He turns to Jerusalem and He begins to take one step at a time. Verse 53, they didn't receive Him. He's traveling towards Jerusalem. He's got somewhere to be. Chapter 13, He's passing from one city and one village to another teaching, but He's proceeding on His way to Jerusalem. Chapter 17, 11, 18, 31, 19, 28. There's this theme through Luke where Luke said He had to get to the end. He had to get to Jerusalem. And here's the deal. I want you to make sure you understand this part of it. From His side and from the Father's, He despised it. Hebrews 12 and verse 2, He hated it. He didn't deserve it. He didn't want to go in a human sense. It was shameful. It was embarrassing. He begged for it not to happen. And yet, back to what we said, He set His face to Jerusalem. And nothing was going to deter Him. You've heard the stories of guys on death row. They've reached the end. They're headed to the chamber. They're resigned to their destiny. There's all the appeals are used up. And they walk with determination to meet their just reward, but they earned it. Jesus did the same thing. He did it for chapters. He did it for months. But he was innocent. He set his face to walk to the death chamber for somebody else. For something he didn't do. Because he had to save us. Have you ever thought about why the transfiguration follows almost immediately after Jesus told Peter, "Get behind me, Satan"? And it's not just because Matthew 17 follows Matthew 16. It's there for two reasons. Number one, Peter and the rest of them had to hear it. That's my son. Listen to him. Quit running your mouth, Peter. Listen to him. He knows what he's talking to. He's got to die. But it's also there because Jesus has made up his mind. Matthew 16, get behind me, say, "I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to die." So Elijah and Moses show up to encourage him. And the father says, "That's the one that pleases me. That's my son. I'm well pleased with him because he's made up his mind that he's going through with this." Now, I said we're going to look at it both sides. Don't forget, it's agony for the father. He sent his son to die. He sent his son not to die in a quick, painless, unexpected way. He said, "I need you to walk into the lion's den. And I need you to let them tear you apart. And I need you to suffer." Luke says in Luke 23, verse 44, that the whole world went dark. The father had to turn his face away as the son became sin. He doesn't turn his back on him. He never abandons him in that sense. He's the obedient child. But as Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me?" At that point that he takes my stripes, that he takes my holes, that he takes my sin, there's nothing God can do about it. That's the moment as a parent when you're helpless. When your child is sick and you would do anything in the world to be sick instead, and you can't do anything about it. When your child hurts and you hurt and you can't make the hurt go away. So what's the point this morning? He took my stripes. He took my nails. He took my abuse. And he took my sin to perfect the plan. If he doesn't do it, the plan doesn't work. If he doesn't do it, none of the other things we've talked about the last 3 weeks matter. He had to do this for his perfection. And he had to do it so that at the end he could say, "It is finished. Father, I did it. I didn't like it. I didn't want it. But I did it." He perfected the plan of God. He perfected himself and he perfected me. That was mine. Go back to our story. You know, at the beginning, you think about the holes in the walls and the memories and the perfection. Now you look at Jesus on the cross. That's mine. I made those stripes. I made those holes. And yet they perfected me. This, that's my fault. Let that sink in. That is my fault. Those were my wounds. Those were my imperfections. But instead, God made him who knew no sin to be sin on my behalf so that I might become the righteousness of God in him. He became imperfect. He became sin. He became striped and bloodied and bruised and broken to perfect me, to fix what was broken. But here's where I want you to get this morning. And I've kind of already hinted at this. None of what He did at Calvary on your behalf counts. None of the stripes He took for you, none of the holes, none of the abuse, none of the spit running down His face, none of the shame counts if we don't do the things that we've talked about for 3 weeks. If I don't believe that He is the Son of God, if I don't repent of my sins, if I don't confess Him before men and be baptized for the forgiveness of my sins, I've wasted the cross. I've wasted the stripes. I've wasted the blood. I've wasted the holes. I've wasted Him perfecting me. So this morning I'm going to beg you, cherish the holes. Cherish the stripes. Cherish the imperfections that the Son of God absorbed for you at Calvary by giving your life to Him in obedience to the gospel. So we stand and sing.